Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Sunday, the 24th day of February, 2013. This is episode 956. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell last year's gadgets. Find out what your used iPad, MacBook, iPhone, Galaxy S, or other smartphone is worth at gazelle.com. And by Stamps.com. Start using your time more effectively with Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it, right from your desk. For our special offer, go to Stamps.com, click the microphone, and enter Tech Guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here. Ooh, hi. Yes, you know, my voice is changing. I'm a squeaky-voiced teenager. Actually, getting over a cold. Anyway, you don't care about that. What you care about is today we're going to talk about tech, and that means nowadays as much cell phones and tablets as computers, maybe more so. Certainly the internet. We'll do a little home theater. Our digital photo guy, Chris Marquardt, stops by in about an hour and a half. He made me buy another camera, so I blame him. as many of you probably blame me. Because we talk about all this stuff and you go, I think I'll have one of those or two of those. I'll tell you one thing I probably wouldn't recommend. In fact, it's a little baffling to me, although I have friends who've already purchased one. It's this new Google Chromebook. Have you seen this? The Pixel. When we first saw videos of it, everybody sat up and took notice and then realized, oh, it's a hoax. Google couldn't possibly be, that would be to think about releasing a high-end laptop computer with a very expensive, fancy screen. In fact, a very high sticker price of $1,300. And it would just be running this Chrome OS of Google's, this kind of poor man's OS, which is just a browser, the Chrome browser, and anything you can do in the browser is it. That's not a high-end computer. So we just assumed, many of us, this was a hoax. Until this week, they released it. The Chromebook Pixel. $1,300. It is a Retina display, a higher resolution slightly than the Apple MacBook Retina display. And it's touch, even though Chrome OS, the operating system, isn't touch, doesn't really take advantage of that in any appreciable way. In fact, it kind of reminds me of the early touch efforts of Microsoft, where they took Windows XP and they glommed touch on top of it, and it didn't really work very well because it wasn't a touched operating system. Chrome OS isn't, and a number of reviewers, I haven't played with it yet, but a number of viewers are saying, yeah, I mean, you can't, it doesn't, things are too small, you can't tap them. It's also a weird screen. Everybody's coming out now with widescreen, 16:9 aspect ratios. Even the older stuff like the iPad and the older laptops were 4:3. That's how your old TV is. This is 3:2. It's a little taller. It's a little odd. The version you can get now for $1,300 has, get ready, a 32-gigabyte hard... Wait a minute. I must be misreading that. A 32-gigabyte hard drive? What the heck? Oh, I get it. Because you're going to be using Google Drive, and you do get a terabyte of storage of Google Drive for 3 years for free. How do you feel about that? Any work you want to do is on the... You need internet access. In next month, they're going to release a version that has a built-in LTE. They haven't said what their pricing will be on that. 32 gigabytes for $12.99. And the version that has, 64 gigabytes of storage will be $14.50. What? I got to point out, you can buy a Very nice Windows 8 Ultrabook or a MacBook Air for $1,300 and have a real operating system. Have Chrome Plus. What? What? All right, whatever. Google's also started inviting people to participate in its Google Glass experiment. These are the eyeglasses that have a little screen above your right eyebrow that you look up into when you want to see what the weather is. $1,500. If you tweet about it, you can get in that. Lucky you, you can get. No, they're not giving it to you. $1,500. You can get, but you can get one for $1,500. I bought one last year at the Google Developers Conference. I have my little $1,500 paperweight, and when it comes out, I guess I'll. But that's my job. I'm a little skeptical. What do you think? So many of us wear contact lenses or got LASIK surgery just so we didn't have to wear glasses. And then, and what if you do wear glasses? Well, you have to get lenses built into your already expensive Google Glass so you can see. And what do you get? Well, you get a camera over your right eyebrow. I can buy you those, though. There's a couple of companies that make those right now, camera glasses. What else? There's the Looksee. It goes over your ear. It's a pair of camera. So that's not new. It's Android, so you can, it'll tell you where you're going. Cuckoo. But you know, the tech press loves this stuff. Because I'll tell you what our point of view. I know what's going on. They're bored. They're waiting for something new and exciting, and they're bored. And they said, well, all right, what's next? Apple wristwatches. Ooh. And everybody writes about it. But when real people get these, are you going to be interested in buying this stuff? I don't know. There's a little bit of a bubble in Silicon Valley where everybody goes, yeah, that's great. Yeah, that's great. Yeah. That's cool. Ooh. And then it gets to the real world, and they can't understand why the real world goes, what? What are you, nuts? A new anti-piracy system is here in the United States. Welcome. The Six Strikes Law. We fought this when it was three strikes. Maybe six strikes is better. Most of the big internet service providers, AT&T, Cablevision, Comcast, Time Warner, and Verizon, will be launching the Copyright Alert System, CAS, on Monday, tomorrow. CAS is a, quote, educational service to combat casual piracy. What happens is you slowly escalate when they... Now, by the way, you don't have to be convicted of piracy or anything. It's just all that has to happen is the recording industry or the motion picture industry sends a note to your internet service provider saying, Leah was pirating music. And the internet service provider goes, oh, no. And they'll send me a letter saying, don't you pirate music. That's the first strike. And it gets up, it goes up and up. Eventually, you have to take a class in piracy. And in theory, I don't know if this will happen, but in theory, after six strikes, after five or six strikes, your internet connection speeds get diminished. And the way this was originally written and has been implemented in other countries, the three strikes law, as in France, is you lose your internet access for life. This they haven't agreed to yet, but we shall see. There is a new, if you want to read all about it, copyrightinformation.org. Now, I'm not for stealing stuff. But on the other hand, you know, people are falsely accused all the time of this stuff. And what is a copyright alert? What do I do if I receive a copyright alert? I wonder. Let me just read. Alert means your internet account may have been used to engage in copyright infringement. And so if you've been downloading copyrighted content illegally, stop doing so immediately. And make sure everyone else who's using your internet does. And secure your home wireless network. Because this is part of the problem, of course, is that it could just be somebody stealing your internet. Depending on your ISP, the range of actions, according to this page, may include a temporary reduction in internet speed, a temporary downgrade to internet service, or redirection you to a landing page for a set period of time. In other words, no internet for you until you contact your ISP or complete an online copyright education program. Well, I guess it's better than cutting you off completely. What do you think about that? So here's some things we can talk about. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the number. 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. If you're outside the U.S., you can use a Skype or one of those voice-over-the-internet programs and call us. It won't cost you anything because it's toll-free here. Website and everything I talk about, including links to these articles and pages, is at our website, techguylabs.com. Always free, always open, techguylabs.com. Your call's next. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. I dreamed a dream. I could do that song as the Cowardly Lion from The Wizard of Oz. I dreamed a dream. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. It is Oscar night. I forgot to mention that. I don't think there's any tech angle to that. Well, there is, actually. They have that Oscars app you could put on your iPad, and I guess they probably have it for Android this year. They've had it for a couple of years, you know, with the backstage cameras. So I did this a couple of years ago. It was extremely annoying. I would be watching on the big screen, and I had my iPad, and then they go to commercial, and you could see it's actually not very interesting. You could see the backstage where all the statuettes are sitting, and then people like standing there talking, and it's really probably more coverage than you. The miserablio, says the next guy in the chat room. 8888-ASK-LEO. That is the phone number. If you want to call with a question or a comment or a suggestion or talk about something going on in your tech world. Who's on line one? I see somebody there, but I can't see their name.
Carl in Canoga Park.
Carl, Canoga Park. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Carl.
Hi, Leo. Great show.
Thank you for calling. What can I do for you?
Well, recently, our company issued Blackberries. We used to have, I don't know what they were, like 96-something Blackberries. They weren't great phones, but one thing that they did really well was they would stream iHeart radio.
Right.
And then they upgraded us to the Blackberry Bold Touch, and now I've downloaded iHeart, and every time I try and stream, it just sits there and says buffering. And it doesn't seem to matter whether I'm coming over the 3G or over Wi-Fi. And every now and then, like particularly when I'm trying to listen to your show, it'll come in for like 1 minute. It'll play 1 minute and then just go back to buffering.
Who's the carrier for that?
Sprint. But the odd thing was that the old one buffered it great. I mean, not buffered it, I'm sorry. It
worked great.
I never had any problems with
iHeart. I'm guessing. Since it's a company phone, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm guessing they probably decided enough of that, and they're doing some sort of shaping to the bandwidth in there.
It could be, but I can stream YouTube videos on it fine.
Yeah, I'd block that one if I were the company. Okay. Well, don't know. That phone is a little out of date.
Yeah.
So this was the company, the company upgraded you to a touch.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I hope the company's going to upgrade you to a BlackBerry 10 sometime soon.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably a pretty old phone they upgraded you to begin with.
Right. But at the time, this was about 6 months ago. At the time, I think it was one of the best BlackBerries.
Yeah. Yeah.
That they were still supporting.
Well, iHeartRadio, which is the application that the folks at Clear Channel, including the show's owned by Clear Channel, by their premier radio networks, wants you to use to listen to Clear Channel stations, is really a good app to use. And I know a lot of people, I wonder if the Sprint network is maybe having problems with it. I think the protocol is being blocked. The problem with blocking YouTube is YouTube's using HLS, HTTP streaming, and so they can't block that without blocking, internet access.
Right.
So my suspicion, I don't know. This is a very, let me ask, this might be hard to find, but is there anybody in the chat room who has a BlackBerry and he's using iHeart Radio? It does work with the Sprint network. Sprint's network itself has not been great.
No, that's true. But if the company decided to mold the streaming, then they did it, I guess, as part of the upgrade. Because my old BlackBerry.
Right. Well, that could be.
Yeah.
You might ask them.
Yeah, I guess I could.
Why can't I listen to my radio anymore?
Yes. Well, it's frustrating because it's the easy. It's such a clear, easy way to listen to you when you're.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, believe me, I love it.
Yeah.
I encourage it. It's a free app. It's on all the platforms, even BlackBerry, even Windows Phone, and, of course, iOS and Android. And it isn't just Clear Channel stations. In fact, it's a number of other radio stations, but it's also music radio. They've got a, you know, artist stations now, kind of like Pandora does. So All in all, it's a wonderful app. Have you tried other radio apps like TuneIn Radio? Have you ever tried that?
I haven't tried TuneIn Radio, but Pandora doesn't seem to have any problems with.
That's interesting. Because it's basically the same kind of thing that Pandora is doing as iHeartRadio is doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Pandora plays fine. It's the oddest thing. There's no settings within the phone that tell it not to buffer so extremely.
No, well, what's going on with buffering is it's not the phone doing it. It's the software says, look, I can only – what I'm going to do, because I need to play stuff in order. When you're playing music, you don't want to play the packets out of order. Or speech that sound like that. So you don't want it to sound like that. So you want to play the packets in order in real time. So what happens with these apps is they get ahead. You'll notice they don't start playing right away. It takes a few seconds, maybe as much as 30 seconds. What they're doing is collecting data, start streaming. They're 30 seconds behind, but if packets are late or come in out of order, they've got that 30 seconds to fix things. The problem is if a lot of stuff is late or the stream is unreliable, it'll use up that buffer. Now it says, well, I'm sorry, I can't play anymore till I recreate my 30-second buffer. Mm-hmm. That's buffering. Mm-hmm. So it's the phone doing it, the app doing it, not the phone, and it's doing it because bandwidth is inadequate or packets are being dropped.
And I think that may be a problem with the new touch because my call.
Well, that's the other possibility. Although the fact that Pandora works makes it puzzling. But the other possibility is just something wrong with that particular phone. In which case, I don't know how work would feel if you brought it back and said, "Well, I can't listen to the radio." But if they wouldn't mind, I would say, "Hey, I think something's wrong with this phone. It is puzzling. I cannot think of why." Pandora would stream fine, but iHeartRadio would not. So I don't know. Now, unfortunately, the problem with the other radio apps is they may not have all the stations you listen to. When Clear Channel released iHeartRadio, they moved stations over. CBS Radio did the same thing. They released an app and basically said, you can't stream it anymore except you have to listen through our legitimate app. It could be something with iHeartRadio. It could be that the administrators who gave you that phone said, and by the way, no listening to iHeartRadio. Pandora is, as the chat room saying, a little bit more resilient with bad bandwidth. What it'll do is instead of buffer, it'll reduce the quality. If there's not enough bandwidth to play in higher quality, it'll go to lower quality. I can't think of anything else, but I would guess it's the company. And why they blocked that but not Pandora, I don't know. Maybe they didn't think of Pandora. Sorry, I can't be more help, Carl. What a terrible way to begin the show. No use at all. 8888 Ask Leo. I do recommend iHeartRadio, though. If you listen to this show on a regular basis on your local radio station and then you're going to be traveling or you know, somewhere where you can't hear your local radio station, having that app is so great because you could still listen to the show. And many, many, many other shows. 8888 Ask Leo is the number. Sorry, Carl.
Yeah, I don't know any answer to that one.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I forgot. I should talk about Gazelle. Let's not forget Gazelle, my friends. Gazelle is the place to go when it's time for new gadgets. We're going to Mobile World Congress. Oh, boy, new phones coming. And perhaps you're thinking, I want to retire that Galaxy S3, maybe my iPhone 5, maybe get the new phone. Even if you're not sure, the time is now to go to gazelle.com and get a quote. Those quotes are good for 30 days, so you'll have plenty of time to decide whether you want to pull the trigger on it. Let's say, hey, yeah, I got an AT&T Galaxy. In fact, I do. AT&T Galaxy S3, 16 gigs. It's in good condition, not perfect. No water damage. How much? $194. That's cash in hand. So what happens is you get a whole bunch of stuff together, iPhones, cell phones, iPads, iPods, Apple computers. Got an old iPad 2 you want to get rid of, let's say. I wonder what that can't be worth very much, right? $240. Whoa, throw that in. Throw that in. And then they pay the postage. They'll actually send you a postage-paid box. And they'll turn it right around. They wipe the data for you. You don't have to worry about that. And then you get a check, a PayPal transfer, or, and this is my recommendation, an Amazon gift card. Because when you do the Amazon gift card, they add 5% to it. Gazelle has paid out millions so far to happy Gazelle customers, including us. Over 500,000 customers, $50 million. Free shipping, fast processing, great prices. But my pro tip is get that quote now, because this thing is not getting more valuable each and every day. It goes down in price. Gazelle.com. What a great way to get your gadgets out of your hands, get some cash, and get the latest, greatest stuff. Gazelle.com. And we thank him for supporting the Tech Guy Podcast. Okay.
Russell's a huge fan. He can't wait to tell all his friends about it. Hey, Russell! You didn't create that video. You just copied someone else's content.
Uploading someone else's content without permission could get you into a lot of trouble.
Listen to Lumpy. That's the Google has an instructional video that you're required to watch if you upload what they deem to be copyrighted material on YouTube. They make you watch this horrid video. Well, you just heard it. You could see how hard it is. I am not. I mean, I certainly hope you understand that I am in no way an advocate of stealing anything, especially content. I'm in the business of creating content. Although, one of the reasons I like giving it away is I don't have to worry about you stealing it. You know, we're supported by ads and not paid content, but absolutely understand why Hollywood and the record industry would be upset about people stealing their stuff. But the problem is the draconian lengths to which they go to prevent it. And then there's also really the larger question of, is what's going on really detrimental to your business? It's, you know, superficially it would seem like, well, if somebody downloads a movie, that means they didn't buy a ticket to see it. But in fact, it's pretty clear that that's not the case, that the people who are downloading stuff are in many cases such big fans that they go see the movie many times. They buy the DVD for the extras. So it's not, to me, completely clear causality. Maybe you disagree, and certainly we are on in Hollywood where they're getting ready for the Oscars. You know, they'll do that quick thing and congratulations to our Technical Achievement Award winners, and then they'll show a bunch of pictures really fast and then get on to the movie stars. But if you go to Oscars.org, you can look at, they've already awarded the technical, scientific and technical awards, and you can see they did that on February 9th, a couple of weeks ago. And you could see who won. And visual effects supervisor DP Bill Taylor was the got a Medal of Commendation. Technical achievement to the creation of the light system for computer graphics lighting at PDI DreamWorks. Some really interesting technology. The inventors of the pose space deformation technique, whatever that may be. Whatever that is, the Katana computer graphics scene management and lighting software from Sony ImageWorks. This is some cool stuff. Wavelet turbulence software. This is all stuff done that is being used to do, computer graphics, CGI. Yeah, it's many more films than one realizes. In fact, the best CGI is often in a movie that doesn't look like it has any special effects at all. Some of that stuff is pretty amazing. If you can see it, then it's not, you know, it's not good. The Scientific and Engineering Award for the development of the tissue physically based character simulation framework. Now, maybe I guess I understand why they don't do these on the TV show. The Mocha planar tracking and rotoscoping software from Imagineer Systems. The Cine VCLX portable power system. an Oscar statuette goes to Cook Optics Limited for innovation in lenses, camera lenses. It's interesting stuff, I think, but it's probably a little geeky for... Do they stream it on Ustream? They should. You can watch it. If you go to Oscars.org, they have a video of it, so you can watch the whole thing. And they probably look and see, how many people watch this? And if it's less than a million, they say, well, we're not putting it on the TV. What is it, a billion people will watch the Oscars tonight? The cost of a 30-second commercial on the Oscars is $1.8 million, I'm told, which is less than the Super Bowl. Super Bowl was, what, $4 million for 30 seconds? But that gives you an idea. I mean, an Oscar ad is worth some money, which means that some of the best film production during the Oscars will be seen during the commercials. Mike, Pacific Palisades, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call. Appreciate it.
Thank you for calling.
I've got some accessibility situations and problems on my computer that just came up yesterday.
Uh-oh.
And I've been trying to fix the problem and haven't been able to. What's happening is on my desktop, I cannot open any programs or folders by just clicking on them. I have to right-click and put open. In my Thunderbird email, I cannot close any tabs or any emails by just clicking delete. I have to right-click the tab and close it. On my Internet Explorer, I cannot use any of my drop-down menus.
So it sounds like your left click, your regular click, is not working very well.
Yeah, and I don't know what's going on. I've gone through and replaced the batteries in the mouse, and I've gone ahead and...
Have you gone in the mouse settings and looked at things like the double-click speed, things like that?
Right. I did all that.
You didn't swap the mouse buttons. No, I guess not, because right-click gives you a drop-down menu, as it should.
Yeah.
Does your left-click work for anything? Can you select text with a left-click?
Can I select what?
So it's just some things that left-click doesn't work for.
Most things, right.
Most things, but not all things.
Not 100%, no.
Well, if not all things, then one must assume the mouse itself is working okay, because it can work. It just doesn't always work.
Correct.
When you double-click on an icon, Windows is the one that interprets what that double-click means. So there's a couple of places that there could be a disconnect. One, it could be that the double-click isn't working. Windows isn't receiving a double-click. The other could be that it's misinterpreting the double-click. And single-clicks don't work either, it sounds like. You click on a menu, it doesn't drop down?
Right. But my taskbar at the bottom of the screen, the quick taskbar, I guess you call it, those work.
So you click on those and it pops up. You click on the start menu, it pops up.
Yeah, if I click on something and I go to a menu in there, like in Word, it doesn't work necessarily. No, see, it does.
Have you tried a different mouse? I presume you just plugged in another mouse just to see.
No, I haven't.
I would try that.
Okay.
The idea, I mean, with troubleshooting, is eliminating possibilities. So we haven't fully eliminated the mouse it's always nice to have a wired mouse around. These wireless mice are great, but funny sometimes. So get a wireless wired mouse, plug it in, see if that works.
Okay.
If it does, then we've narrowed it down. If it doesn't, okay, now it has nothing to do with hardware, probably. It could have to do with the drivers, the human interface device drivers, HID drivers, which is what that mouse uses. Those are built into Windows, but they could be corrupt. And it could be Windows itself has broken the relationship between what to do. You know, it's getting the clicks, but it doesn't know what to do. That's more complicated, although I've seen it happen with Windows. It's stuff in the registry that's kind of a mess to mess around with. A couple of things I would try. First, swap out the – I'll just give you the steps. I can't tell you what's wrong from this distance, but I can tell you what I would do. First, swap out the mice for a wired mouse. See how that works. Could be the wireless is a problem, the wireless – a dongle could be messed up. The mouse itself could be messed up. You did change the batteries. That's, of course, the first thing you do. But try a wired mouse. They're $5. You can borrow one from a friend. If that does not work, okay, we can say that's not the mouse. Then the next thing I would do is I'd probably make sure that you have up-to-date drivers. If you're using a the mouse that came with a computer, there's not much you can do. You could go to the manufacturer and see if they have an update for it. If it's a Microsoft mouse or a Logitech mouse, they offer dedicated drivers. I would download the updated version of those and reinstall those. That's an easy thing to do. If none of that fixes it, then it sounds like you've got a Windows issue. You could try repairing Windows. I know what you should do. Log in safe mode and see what happens. See if that's working. Make sure nothing's stealing those clicks. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. A lot of what we do on the show is tech troubleshooting, tech support. I know it's not the most interesting thing in the world, but there are certain things that are probably good to know if you're involved in this. And this is why computing has moved away from the PC to the tablet, because it's more of a disposable object. You don't have some of these same things, like a mouse just kind of suddenly stopped working. It's because PCs have gotten so complex over the years. The millions of lines of code in Windows, it's so complex. There's so many things that can go wrong. And I think that's why a lot of people are just saying, I'm just going to use a tablet. Maybe I can't do as much. Maybe it's harder to get some basic things done. Or even a Chromebook. Maybe that's why a Chromebook. But at least the complexity is lower. One thing that would certainly be worth doing, and this is kind of an advanced troubleshooting technique, but if you are an advanced person, it would be a good thing for you to have, is download Ubuntu or some other Linux Live CD. Remember that the Linux operating system is a free open source operating system. Works on most PC hardware just fine. Basic things like mouse and keyboard always work. Most screens now work. Sometimes other hardware, graphics card and stuff, you maybe not get the most performance from or whatever. But it's generally sufficient. And the beauty of these live CDs is you can boot them, put them in the CD drawer, restart your computers, tell the computer, hey, boot the CD. And now you've got a running operating system. It's not installed. It's not on your hard drive. It's just on a CD. Yes, it's not operating as quickly, but what it will tell you is it'll tell you, it's a great diagnostic tool for something like this mouse problem. If the mouse works fine when you boot this live CD, menus work, double clicks work, everything works fine, then you know it's not a hardware problem. It's an operating system problem. With that one simple thing. So it's a very handy thing. And the nice thing is it's free to do. If you've got a CD or a DVD burner, you can download a copy of Ubuntu, UBUNTU.com. What is other Linux? Is a good one is Linux Mint. You could Google Linux Mint. Download that. Again, these are all free. Make a CD. You'll want to download the live CD version or the live DVD version of it. Make a boot disk. And just have it around. You don't have to keep it up to date. You don't have to use it particularly. But it's a very handy thing. If something's going wrong and you're just trying to figure out, is my hardware messed up or is it something screwed up with Windows? This will tell you. This will tell you. And this would be a perfect way to test that mouse. Now, I understand if the mouse isn't working well, this is a good thing to do now while everything's working well. In fact, I'd love if there are other suggestions for tools people should have on hand for diagnosing these problems. Please share them with us. 8888-ASK-LEO. One I've recommended in the past is the Ultimate Boot CD. It's a free download you could put on a CD. It does have Linux on it, but it also has a bunch of other tools on it that are handy for recovering a hard drive or diagnosing problems, scanning for viruses and so forth, redoing partitions. And these are all free or open source programs, so it's legal to do this. There are other boot CDs I've seen out there that have pirated software on them. I generally don't recommend those, as useful as they might be. But the Ultimate Boot CD is free. It's at ultimateboot.com. Tourist in the chat room says the Trinity Rescue CD is good. So that's another one I'll have to take a look at. And these are the things you want to do before you have a problem, because usually after you have a problem, you can't get online to download these. The Trinity Rescue Kit is at trinityhome.org. CPR for your computer. Ah, that's a good idea. So these are some useful things. And if, you know, the problem is that mouse or the USB port or some physical problem, it will continue in another operating system. If it's something gone wrong with Windows, and Windows often can go haywire, then that will, you know, let you know, oh, it works fine with this boot CD. Must be something else. Let's see. Actually, I want to do Bob in San Diego first. Hey, Bob, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. He's been.
How are you, Leo?
I'm great, Bob. How are you?
I'm feeling about the same way you are. I've got a kind of a little bit of a cough that's hanging on.
It is. This was a bad cold and flu season, wasn't it?
Yes. If you got an extra minute, I got something because you've recommended people writing before we talk about the SIM card.
Yeah.
To Dan Hesse.
Yes.
He's the CEO of Sprint.
If you, I always say, if you have a problem with a company, you can't get it resolved. You should always try, you know, calling support and getting it resolved first. But if you can't get it resolved, every single big company has an office of the CEO where they will handle mail and emails directly to the CEO, and they often will give you satisfaction.
Well, they didn't in this case, and it was a very simple thing. I tried several phones, and you remember he was on TV all the time saying, "Where if you're not happy in 30 days, bring it back, and we'll return you to where you were."
Yeah.
Well, they couldn't return me to where I was without giving me a $20 credit. And the lady who gave me the credit never told me that it was only for 2 years. And when the 2 year expired, I called up, and everybody I talked to agreed with me, but they had no power to do it. The retention department can't do it anymore like they used to. And so I wrote a letter to Dan, and I basically said in the closing paragraph, if I never tried these three phones, I would be back where I should be. What will you do about it? And somebody called me a couple of days later, and they said, and then a couple of days later, they said, we'll do nothing. And I was shocked.
Well, there you go. Sometimes it doesn't work. Nothing is perfect. I actually left Sprint about 5 or 6 years ago because I was unhappy about customer service. And I still have I came back because I have now phones for all four carriers. One thing I can tell you with some certainty, Bob, all the cell phone companies have terrible customer service.
They're operated
as if they were monopolies.
I agree with you.
Yeah, even though they're not.
I hear that from my friend.
Yeah.
Now, tell me about SIM cards. I got an iPhone 5 with Sprint, and I understand I can get a SIM card in Europe when we go there. Where is the least expensive place to buy a SIM card for Europe?
So here's what will happen. A SIM card is the personality of the phone. Now, I don't know about Sprint, but if they told you this, okay. It's for sure true on Verizon. So you got to understand that Sprint and Verizon use a different cell phone technology than the rest of the world. They're using something called CDMA, originated here in the U.S. We're one of the last people. I think Canada's got some CDMA. Japan has some. But generally, if you travel, you want a different technology called GSM. T-Mobile and AT&T use GSM in the U.S., but Sprint uses CDMA. Now, because the iPhone is sold on three out of the four carriers, they have GSM and CDMA versions. The Verizon version, and I don't know if this is true for Sprint, but the Verizon version has both. It has CDMA and GSM, and Verizon did not lock the GSM. It's my understanding that Sprint did lock the GSM. So you need to get, it's my understanding, and you should ask somebody at Sprint, good luck, you need to get the Sprint GSM slot unlocked. Then, when you get to Europe, you can buy a SIM card. It changes the personality of your phone. It gives you a European number, European data plan, all of that. Post office, phone company, all over, easy to find. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. And it's time to talk about tech. Well, that could be anything from cell phones to computers, hard drives, solid state drives, optical drives. We can talk about the PlayStation 4, the home theater. Our photography guy is coming up at 33 and a third past the hour, Chris Marquardt, to review our assignment resolution. Didn't get a picture taken, darn it. But we'll talk digital photography. I'm planning, you know, I do every year, I take a nice long couple of week trip to somewhere interesting and exotic, and I won't be going till the fall. But I do like to think about this stuff early, and I'm planning my photography, looking at cameras, that kind of thing, because I want to have a good camera for the trip. We were talking before the break about cell phones. That's always an interesting challenge. In this case, I'm going to four or five countries, Italy, Greece, Turkey. You know, it's going to be an Adriatic trip, Montenegro. So the problem with getting a SIM chip, of arriving in a country and getting a SIM chip, is generally you get a SIM chip for a single country. You have to get one for each country. If you're going to be in a single country for a few weeks, it's probably worth it. You need an unlocked phone. Our caller had an iPhone on Sprint. He's going to have to go to Sprint and get it unlocked, but they will do that if you're in good standing, and especially if you've had it for a little while. Once you unlock it, then you arrive, you get off the plane, and often in the airport, there are kiosks there. Every cell company will have kiosks, you know, stores in town that you can go to. Sometimes the post office, even tobacconists, you know, and newsstands will sell SIM cards. And you just have to look at the price. What you're looking for, remember, you know, the disadvantage of this is you're no longer, once you put that new SIM card in, your phone will no longer work at the old number. It'll work at this new European number. And it will also be, you should also get a data plan if you're using an iPhone. My colleague Sarah Lane was in Great Britain. She got a card from a company called Three. And it wasn't very expensive. I think it was £35, something like that, for a month of unlimited data and phone calls. So that was a good deal. But each country probably has its own good deal. Now, I remember, maybe there's somebody in the chat room can fill me in. We have lots of listeners all over the world, and many of them are in the chat room. There are some SIM cards that are cross-European. So if you're going to be in France, England, and Germany, there are some companies that you can buy a single SIM card that would work in all of those. Maybe somebody in the chat room will remember that. The TruPhone, okay, TruPhone. And you can search online for TruPhone and find out more about that. You might even be able to buy the SIM card now and have it in time. In China, certainly China Telecom will have a SIM card. Vodafone. There are companies that are cross international borders in Europe. Dan F. in our chat room says, get a MiFi. It's true that another way to go is to keep your iPhone, turn off the data plan on the iPhone. You don't want to be doing data roaming. That's very expensive. And you may not want to lose your phone number. And nobody, you know, nobody's going to call you. But if there's an emergency at home, you want them to be able to reach you on your regular number, even though it's going to cost you a buck a minute or whatever. But you know you're not going to be taking long conversational calls. It's just for security. So you might keep their phone number, not buy an international data plan, turn off international data, but then use Wi-Fi. And you can, and this is another way to go. And instead of getting a SIM card, buy one of these little 3G or 4G Wi-Fi access points. We call them MiFis sometimes. They're credit card sized. And that's a really good choice. You keep your iPhone on Wi-Fi, and you just carry that thing around with you. It'll also work on an iPad and a notebook, and that has that advantage. So that's not a bad choice either. Vodafone and O2 will allow European roaming, although, as I understand it, can be very expensive in Europe to roam. So you want to make sure that you're not using roaming if possible. 8888 Ask Leo. Planning a trip. You know, here we are in late February. We're starting to think about the summer travel. I envy you, Bob. He's going to Europe. That'll be fun. Michael in Queens, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Leo. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Hey, thanks for calling.
I watch the Tech Guy live on my Roku box Saturday and Sunday. And
I salute you.
I record on my TiVo box.
Marvelous. That's great.
Okay. I have, I guess you would call it a follow-up question to the gentleman called yesterday about transferring files between his PC. And
yeah.
Okay. I have a Nexus 7, and I hook it up a USB cable to my PC. It recognizes it, and I get the directory from the Nexus 7, and then I pull up, I store my media files on a USB drive.
Okay.
And I pull up that drive directory, and I've tried two ways to do it. In other words, I do drag and drop.
Yep.
And also just copy.
Both are the same thing, by the way. Yeah.
Yeah. I get a screen saying it's copying, and then halfway through, it freezes up.
Ah.
And so
sounds like your maybe card is full. Is your card full?
What do you mean my card?
The memory space you're copying it to might be full.
I'm copying it directly to the Nexus 7.
Yeah, but it could be full.
No, it has 21 gigabytes free.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so I'm watching the window, which is, you know, the copy window.
How big is the file you're trying to copy? It's not more than 2 gigabytes, is it?
Well, 1.5. I've tried 2.7, regardless of what I try.
Well, there are... Okay, so don't try to copy more than 2.
Okay, so I tried to copy one that was 1.6.
Okay.
It gets halfway, and then it literally, you know, I'm looking at the window, and it stops. It
yeah.
It's like 2 minutes left, and it just simply stops.
Windows 7?
Windows Vista.
Yeah. File copying until Windows 8 was terrible on Windows. In fact, that's why Microsoft has a command line copying utility that works better, RoboCopy. It's not commonly known, but Windows file copying was terrible, unreliable. So there's a couple of things you could do. There's RoboCopy or Robust File Copy, which is built into Windows Vista. It's on the command line, though. So I don't know how comfortable you are with DOS commands.
The really amazing thing, if I could interrupt you, the really amazing thing is when I hit the cancel on the copy window, and then I go back to my Nexus 7, I can actually play the media file up. It'll say...
It failed halfway through, so you've got exactly half of the file.
But it shows up on the Nexus 7.
Yeah,
and I use
that's not a surprise. It just means it halfway copied. So what you're experiencing, in my opinion, is the very, very lousy job Windows does of copying extra large files. It fails, and when it fails completely and doesn't recover. So there are other choices. Remember when I talked to that guy, I mentioned AirDroid and DropCopy or Dropbox. There are other ways to do this that are more robust. RoboCopy should work, but because the Nexus 7 isn't showing up as a normal hard drive, it may not work. That is the way that Microsoft wants you to do it. I just saw a new file copying utility for Android that just came out, and I'm trying to find the name of it, that will add to that list from yesterday. But the nice about Dropbox is it's going to be slower but more robust. So if it fails, it will just pick up where it left off. And that's what I would probably try is Dropbox. Free for up to 5 gigs, Dropbox.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Oh, the new one is Mac only, come to think of it. The Tech Guy Podcast, as always, brought to you by A Way to Live Bump. Brought to you by Stamps.com.
It's hard.
You know I'm a Stamps.com fan. I don't know if I've told you that lately. I came into the office yesterday, the day before. I said, I need envelopes and stamps. Because I don't use Stamps.com at home. We have at least one, I think two accounts here. And Frederick said, well, let me print you some. And she just printed out stamps. Forever stamps. Stamps.com lets you buy. I love that. Buy and print official U.S. postage from your computer, your printer, always up to date. You know, the rates are going up. Don't worry about it. Stamps.com handles all of that for you. You get that great scale. Here's my scale, my Stamps.com scale. This is the kit, by the way, you'll get. I'll tell you how to do that in a second, the no-risk trial offer. You get the scale. That's USB. You plug that in. You plop your letter or package on there, and you always have exactly the right postage. Stamps.com will print right on. You can print stamps. That's what she did on stickers. You know, like Avery stickers. But you could, and by the way, the stamps can have your logo. They can really look nice. But you can also print right on envelopes. I don't know if I should have an example. I don't think I have one. But it prints right onto the envelope. And it'll print the return address, your company's logo. Very professional looking. It even pulls the recipient's address from your address book. If you use Outlook or QuickBooks, it'll pull it from QuickBooks. If you're... if you sell online, Amazon, eBay, Etsy, PayPal, something like that, pull it right from that site. will automatically send out an email if it's express mail or priority mail to the recipient with a tracking number and all. It does this. It's for pro mailing. So if you do a lot of mailing in your business, if you're an online seller, you got to have a Stamps account. Now here's the deal: go to stamps.com and you could try it. It's not. I can't say it's a free trial. It's a virtually free trial. I'll tell you what the deal is. Go to stamps.com. And by the way, don't just go for the $80 trial right on the front page there. Click the microphone and do the offer code TECHGUY, two words, tech guy. So here's the deal. It's a $110 offer. You get $55 in coupons for postage. You can use those over the first few months of your account. You get the digital scale. And the only reason we can't say it's free is you do have to pay shipping and handling, about $5 for that scale. To make up for that, though, they give you a $5 supply kit free and a four-week trial free. So, you know, it's a pretty good no-risk trial offer, including all that, $55 of free postage. I've been using stamps.com for almost 10 years. It is fantastic. Try it. Stamps.com. Click the microphone. Use the offer code TECHGUY. And we thank Stamps.com for making the Tech Guy podcast possible. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, 8888. Ask Leo. Some limitations on Dropbox I should mention. They do, if you have a free account, limit you to 300 megabytes. That's not enough for our last caller. But a paid account, I think, goes up to 2 gigabytes. You know, there are lots of ways to do it. The thing that when you're copying these giant files over USB... the problem is if anything goes wrong, it just abandons. Windows just says, nah, never mind. And that's one of the good reasons to go to Windows 8. They have massively improved file copy, both in speed and reliability. And until Windows 8 came out, we really didn't realize how bad Windows Vista and Windows 7 were. They were really bad. So much so that Microsoft actually had a robust copy utility that they hid in there. They didn't want to admit it was bad, but they... For people in the know, they'd use RoboCopy instead, but you have to do it from the command line. And it may or may not work on that Nexus 7. I'm not sure. But we will. So yesterday we talked about some of these ways of getting stuff off of your computer onto a Android device. We'll add more links to that, those show notes, so that, and we'll refer back to it from today's show notes so that you can choose the one that you like best. The one I was thinking of, and I still haven't found the name, is Mac only. So that wouldn't be a good solution for our caller. But it's kind of it does kind of like an AirDrop for Android. Very cool. Very cool. Lots of different ways to solve this. 8888 Ask Leo. That's my number. 888-827-5536. Taryn is in Los Alamitos. Thanks for hanging on, Taryn. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Hi, Taryn.
Hi.
Is it Karen or Taryn?
Karen with a T.
Okay. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too.
Thanks for hanging on.
Thank you. I got a Canon camera, and I have a CD that I got to download, and it takes Mac 10.6.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a Mac 10.4.
Well, first of all, I don't ever use the Canon software.
Okay.
What camera did you get? Do you remember?
My box.
It's a little point and shoot.
It's an elf, yeah.
I love those elves. You don't need any special software.
Oh, okay.
So you can use iPhoto, which is probably what you want to use anyway.
Oh, okay.
So don't worry about the software that comes with these cameras is almost always terrible.
Okay.
They feel like they have to bundle it in. It's not necessary. If you get a very fancy new camera, sometimes the only way you can interpret the raw files coming off of that camera is with software that comes with the camera. But almost always, Apple, Microsoft, Adobe, they update their software and it can handle it. Certainly, any Canon Elf, you don't need any special software. Just use the software that comes with your Mac.
Okay, then my question then is, should I upgrade my operating system?
Ah, well, that's another question entirely. Yeah. Certainly not for this reason, but what version of Macintosh are you using?
It says version 10.4.11.
Ooh, that's pretty old.
Yeah, it is.
That's really old. What kind of Mac is it? You may not have the option of upgrading if it's
okay. It's a MacBook.
Yeah, I mean we're up to MacBook 10.8 now. So
it says 1.1.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
You, so I would just, you know, the nice thing about OS X is it's cheap. Mm-hmm. $30 to upgrade. They do it every year. But the problem is sometimes the older hardware won't support the newer operating system.
That was my concern.
In general, I would use the latest version of the operating system that your hardware will support because that's going to be the most fixed up. But, you know, I think you can, on that one, I think 10.5 is probably the latest you can use. I don't think it's going to make a big difference.
Okay.
I think you probably just should stick with what you got.
Okay, that's what I was wondering.
And your next Mac, you'll go to Mountain Lion, you'll go to the next version, and then you'll have the App Store, which is very nice. You'll have full screen, you'll have, you know, some interesting stuff that you don't have yet. But as the chat room is saying, because we think, is it a white MacBook?
It's white.
Yeah, we think that that white MacBook can go up to 10.6 no later.
Wow, that's interesting. Okay.
So I think you'd stick with 10.4.11.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, I thought that's what I thought. It works fine. I thought until it dies, I'll wait to buy a home.
Yeah, and you're due for a new one.
I do?
It's 4 or 5 years old, right?
Yeah. Well, hey, I bought it online off of Craigslist.
Wow. Oh, you got it recently?
No, I got it quite some time ago, right. But it's worked fabulous.
Well, you got your money's worth. Until you feel like you need a new one, I wouldn't worry about it. But you will see some big changes when you get the new one.
I know. I can't wait. Okay. Well, thank you.
You're welcome. Enjoy your new camera. You're going to love it.
Okay, thanks.
I love those elves. They're real thin and tiny, but they have very good image quality. I think they're nice point-and-shoots. I mentioned I was getting ready for a big European trip in the fall, and so what I like to do is figure out my camera strategy. We're going to talk cameras with Chris Marquardt in a few minutes, our digital photo guy. But I like to think about my strategy, and I'll tell you what I found out. I went to the Super Bowl, remember, a couple of weeks ago in New Orleans, and I was in Paris last year, and I have a big, very nice, big Canon 5D, you know, professional digital SLR. Big, it's heavy, and it also begs to be stolen as it hangs off my arm. In fact, I remember a couple of years ago, I was in Buenos Aires, and I was carrying it around, and literally a guy, an Argentinian, came up to me and said, "Do not, what are you doing? You're going to get," it was after, it was probably midnight, and I was walking through the streets of Buenos Aires. He said, "Go home. They're going to steal your camera. Go home." I was bold, and I continue to walk around and take some beautiful pictures. I love night photography. However, this camera is a little bit large. So while I'm not going to give it up because I love the image quality, I did decide to get a smaller camera. And when Chris Marquardt joins us, I'll ask him. He was talking about it last week. I'll ask him what he thinks of the Olympus OM-D. I've had it for about a week, and man, I love it. It's tiny, and it's light, and it's not going to ask to get stolen. It doesn't look like a expensive camera. It is, but it doesn't look like one. Fred in Glendale, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Fred.
Good afternoon, Leo. How you doing?
I'm wonderful. Good afternoon to you. What can I do for you?
Yeah, always listen to you when I can. I'm 74 years old, so I'm a little slow.
No, you're not. Fantastic. That's great.
I really enjoy listening to you. Anyway, I over Christmas, I purchased a Google Nexus 7 tablet.
How do you like it?
Well, no, I don't like it.
Okay.
I bought it specifically to go to different sites, especially news sites, mm-hmm. so I can sit in my easy chair and read and find out what's going on. Any site I go to, there is text, but there is no audio or video at all, anywhere. If I click on any video or anything, a message comes that you need Flash player or some other plugin.
Yeah. Unfortunately, no tablet does well with Flash. No phone does well with Flash. And the sites that you're going to that want Flash really are antiquated. They need to stop using Flash. Flash is a security hazard. A massive security hazard, and it requires so much processor power that tablets can't handle it. So hang on, we'll talk a little bit about it in just a second. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. The Paul Simon music tells me it must be time to talk digital photography with our good buddy Chris Marquardt. He is the guy who hosts the Tips from the Top Floor podcast, and is a professional photographer. Hey, Chris.
Hey, Leo. How are you today?
Well, you got to be careful when you say, I'm great. You got to be careful, Chris, when you say things like, oh, a lot of people at my last workshop had that OMD camera from Olympus. That's a nice camera, because Leo might go out and buy it. I was looking for a, and he did. I was looking for a lighter camera for travel, and I'll still probably take the big old 5D. But sometimes you really don't want to carry a big camera around, and yet you still want, you know. And so I did buy. Remember, I bought. I'm such a sucker. The Fujifilm X100, but it didn't have interchangeable lenses. It has a nice big sensor, but I had to use that one lens, and I'm kind of stuck on interchangeable lenses. I'm thinking more and more that this new mirrorless technology, doesn't have to move a mirror out of the way, called Micro Four Thirds, is cool, because a number of companies make Micro Four Thirds cameras. They all can use the same lenses, so it's no longer I'm stuck with Canon or Nikon. I can use lenses from Panasonic, from Olympus, from Fuji, from a lot of different
companies. And you can get an adapter and use your old manual lenses on them as well.
I have an old EP1 Olympus, so yes. I had already bought the adapter that lets me use old film camera lenses for the Olympus OM1, and I have an old 50mm lens. Now, it's manual focus, but boy, it looks great.
Oh, and the OMD looks almost like an old film camera, so that is a very
inconspicuous camera. I feel very old-fashioned, and yeah, I don't think anybody's going to steal it, because they're going to think, oh, what do I want a film camera for? I hope. Anyway, I'm very happy with the images. I think it's a nice little camera.
Very good. I blame it on Dustin and September. Those two had them with them.
And so you agree it's a decent camera? You know,
it is, absolutely.
Yeah. Now, I was going to take some pictures for our assignment, but I couldn't think of anything to illustrate the word resolution.
Well, we get a lot of pictures that of people taking pictures of their screen and of their, like, the pixels on the screen, which is kind of, yeah, an immediate guess. But then I like when people think around the corner, when they think outside the box, and some people did. So let's look at three. I made another pick.
I've got some here. These are all three illustrating the concept or the idea of resolution.
Yeah, and I left out those with the pixels. They're all beautiful, but I was looking more at...
Not screen resolution, huh?
Not screen resolution. I sent you an email with the pictures. So the first one is by Bob Benson 49.
Yeah.
And it's called Mount Ammenham from Mount Hamilton. And yeah, he writes in the description that after living in San Jose, California for 17 years, he resolved he would celebrate by driving up to the Lick Observatory on Mount Hamilton, and then he took a landscape photo from up there. And it's, first of all, I think it's a very good example of a landscape photo that is not wide angle, because he shot that with a, I think, 180mm focal length. So it's a telephoto landscape picture.
Yeah, wow.
And just the layering of the mountains you see with the fog, and that there's so much depth of this picture. And I think it proves that you do not need a wide angle to take great landscape pictures. So this is a really good one. And it's apparently high resolution, but no, he had a resolution to go up there. So that's why.
Is that it? My resolution was...
That's his resolution.
To celebrate his 17th year in California. All right. And it's, you know what I like sometimes? Now, remember, this is the radio, so we're describing pictures. I understand it's crazy.
Yes.
We will put links to all the pictures in the show notes at techguylabs.com. But what I like about it, and I'll describe this, is, and I see this sometimes in landscape, and I always try to do it, is these layers. So there's the foreground layer, then there's several layers going from foreground to background. And I love that feeling of you're looking like, it almost is like strata on a rock outcropping. It's just
beautiful. It gives you lots of depth with all these different kind of mountain ranges behind each other, layering into the depth.
Technically a very nice picture. Very crisp.
Absolutely.
All right. So there you go. Thank you for, that's picture one, Bob Benson. And it's Mount Ammenham, by the way.
Mount
Ammenham. Now, here's one from Zotan, I think, yeah?
Yes, and it's called Inner Drive. And in the description, it says, a journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step. So that is someone out exercising.
I love this. So she's in the foreground, just a silhouette And there's a long winding road leading out from the bottom of the image all the way to the top center of the image. And your eye just follows this road. It's so beautiful.
Yes.
And I do like it. It's black and white, but I love about it is it's kind of soft contrasts, this landscape, except for the human figure, which is just black and white.
It's another landscape picture with a longer focal length, again, 150 millimeters,
wow.
So it's zoomed in, it's not wide angle. And that kind of compresses that depth, and you get this feeling that everything's close together, but at the same time, you see that it's actually quite far. So and it leads into the light. There's a sun on the back of that mountain. So there's a kind of a destination that person was running towards.
So this is typical
another resolution.
This is typical of telephoto, right? It kind of flattens distances. Is that what it is?
Yeah, it brings close things close together with things that are far away. So with a wide angle, you have something that's close is really big, and something that's far away is really, really small. And telephoto kind of equalizes that. It evens that out. So the closer things and the things further away kind of seem more at the same size.
Now, our last one, I think you just threw in for fun.
I had to pick that.
This is from Dazzer, Dazzr.
And it's another resolution, right?
It says, computer problems resolved. And it says, the next time I'll call the tech guy. And he's got, this is actually a composition because he's got a buzz saw or a table saw going into his his monitor, which is smoking.
Yeah.
I don't know how he made this. Maybe more of a Photoshop than...
Maybe, I don't know, but he did a good job putting that together as a concept picture and putting a little message in there. And,
very fun.
Yeah, he better call you instead of sawing his monitor in half.
That's
the resolve computer problem. There are better ways to resolve computer problems.
Thank you, Dazzer. So let me ask you, the point of this is not so much to give a prize or even to acknowledge what somebody's up to, but really to get people to take pictures, right?
That's pretty much it. You go out, take a picture. Actually, take a new picture. Don't go and pull one out of your hard drive that you shot 5 years ago. Go out, take a new one. That's some you got to move. I mean, you can't learn how to ride a bicycle by reading about it. And the same is true with photography. You got to move. You got to get it going, and then you'll learn just automatically by doing it. So that's what these assignments are
all
for.
All right, I am going to do this assignment with my brand new camera. Because part of the reason I got it now instead of the fall is I want to have a few months under my belt so I know this thing. And of
Very
course,
good.
How do you know it? By using it, right?
Exactly. That's the only way. So I've chosen another assignment. I looked at the weather forecast for North America. There is ice and snow. So the new assignment is ice. And I want something special with that ice. I want backlight. I want the picture of ice to be lit from behind.
All right. I'm writing this down. Backlit ice.
Ice with backlit.
But we will use as the tag just ice, I guess. Or should we?
I think so.
Yeah, because otherwise...
Rene, our moderator, will put it in the description. So as soon as you go onto the Tech Guy group on Flickr, which is at flickr.com/group/techguy, you will see the instructions by Rene, and she'll have that up in no time, I'm sure.
Yeah, 10,000 members now, 2,887
yes.
photos. We're really doing good. Thank you to Renee Silverman, who's the moderator of this. Ice, backlit ice.
Yes.
I'm a little bit of a disadvantage. I'm in California.
Well,
I got some ideas.
You have a fridge, right?
I got some ideas. Chris Marquardt is at chrismarquardt.com or Discover the Top Floor, or you'll find him at our website, techguylabs.com. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.
My OMD. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. So just to finish the thought on the assignment, Chris does these every month. You have about 4 weeks before he's going to look at these pictures. If you want to play along, it's just a chance to take a picture. And by the way, you can use a camera phone. You don't need a fancy phone, a fancy camera at all. Whatever you've got, a point and shoot, anything, your Canon Elf. But the idea is to start thinking with your eyes, to thinking about composition and light and playing with it. We're looking for backlit ice. That's a challenging picture to take technically. In order to participate, you need to have a Flickr account. Flickr is Yahoo's photo sharing site. And if you have a Yahoo account, that'll do. But if you don't, it's free to sign up. And then once you've got your account set up on Flickr, you don't need a pro account, just a regular account will do. Go to the groups and search for Tech Guy, TECH GUY. That's our special group. You'll see my face 10,000 members is kind of the giveaway. There's a few unofficial tech guy groups, but you want the official one. And once you start taking pictures, you can upload as many as one a week illustrating this ice concept. Tag them with ice so that Renee knows what you're doing. And so that means you get to upload as many as four different images. And again, it's not a competition. It's not a contest. It's just about having fun and an excuse to go out and take some pictures. Challenging to get this backlit ice, though. This will be interesting. So good luck. Have fun. We were talking before the break. We were talking with Fred in Glendale, who is having some strange issues with his Nexus 7. Thank you for your patience, Fred.
Sure.
So you can't hear audio. You can't see video. Now, the flash thing, I understand. That's because flash is not supported on Android or iOS. Portable devices just don't do well with flash.
Okay. But my question would be, then, what do I do to make it work?
You can't.
I mean, they sell me something that I can't use?
That's right. And same thing with if you bought an iPad.
Wow.
That's because flash is junk. Mm-hmm. And it's very demanding on the processor. You could sideload. It's complicated. You could sideload the flash and download, blah, blah, blah. And it won't work well. The frame rates will be terrible. The video will look awful. Flash is not designed for portable processors, period. So I could tell you how to get flash on there, but you wouldn't be happy with the results. The good news is all the good sites have abandoned flash by now. So if you go now, there are still sites that haven't, but because so many people now are visiting sites on tablets, these sites know they've got a problem and they're going to move away from flash as quickly as they can. That's going to get better.
The only place that I can see audio and video is on Google site, YouTube.
Yeah, YouTube doesn't, right. Can well, both can use flash and not. They tend not to.
No, but why can't they do the same thing that they do with YouTube with the other side? I don't know.
Good question. They should fix that. It's like they're ignoring, the largest growing segment, which is tablet users.
So this is, I don't know, how can they sell something that doesn't work? This is interesting to me.
Well, Apple doesn't work on Apple either. There is no tablet that works well with flash.
I see. There is no other way to fix it at all.
Well, you could put flash on there, but it won't work very well. Yeah. The problem is not the tablets. The problem is that this is a bad technology. That unfortunately was the only way to do it. It's like real audio. Remember the old days of real audio?
Yes.
Everybody used it. You can't use real audio on these tablets either. Fortunately, it's been supplanted. It's been replaced.
So is there a hope that someday I can use this?
Oh, yeah. You can use it for a lot of sites. As you saw, you can use it for YouTube. More and more sites are converting away from flash.
YouTube is the only site. No other site I've gone to.
Well, Adobe stopped making flash for tablets.
I'm sorry?
Adobe, which makes the flash player,
right.
stopped making it for tablets.
Right.
They said, it doesn't work. We're not going to support it. So it wasn't even Google and Nexus that stopped using it. Adobe said, we're not going to do it anymore. In the case of iPads and iOS, it was Apple. Apple started this by saying, we're not going to put flash on our devices.
Well, if YouTube can, I can watch YouTube, why can't I watch other stuff? I mean, why can't...
Because YouTube has realized that flash was dying and made their videos be both flash and HTML5. If you go to my website, twit.tv, we've abandoned our flash player and we're starting to use an HTML5 player. Most people are starting to do this. It's a transitional time.
So different sites would eventually...
Eventually everybody will do this. Any site that isn't yet supporting these tablets is really missing the boat. Does CNN work?
I see. Okay.
What sites do you go see? Is it CNN?
I go CNN, yes. ESPN.
Yeah.
CBS.
It's sad. You would think these...
It doesn't work. It just... I get two... Either it says you need flash player or a plug-in.
Yeah, which isn't available. The other thing that you can do, and I think my suspicion is that what's really going on is these sites want you to download their app. They don't want you to go there in a browser. They want you to download the CNN app. They want you to download the ESPN app. And I think that's terrible.
Yeah.
the apps are free, but then you have to go into an app and you can only visit ESPN, you can only visit CNN. Right. You want to do what everybody really wants to do, which is browse around from page to page. That's exactly why they want you to get the apps. So you're kind of what's happening here is the reason these sites haven't converted is because they want to own you. Mm. Welcome to technology. It's terrible. They are not listening to consumers. They're doing what is best for them and hoping that consumers will just go along.
I see. So if I do download the apps, I can go to...
Oh, yeah. The apps work. Okay. Yeah. Well,
at least I know that. Okay.
Yeah. So, but then you have to go to... See, here's what the problem is. If you're on the web surfing around, you go to CNN, there's a high likelihood that you might surf away from CNN. But if you're in the CNN app, well, now you got to close the app and launch another app. So you're much more likely to stay on CNN. That's what they want. Well, that's why they don't have any...
I'm retired. I have time.
So get the apps. Go to play.google.com or launch the Play Store on your Nexus 7 and get the apps.
Get the apps from the site itself? Or how?
No, they're on the... So you have an application called Play on there. Mm-hmm. And if you go into Play and you can search for CNN or you could in the app section of the Play Store... And these are all free. They're just, and then you'll have an icon on your tablet that says CNN or says ESPN, and you just launch that.
Right. But I go through Google Play to do this?
Yeah. If you look on your icons on your Nexus 7, one of them says Play.
Oh, Play. Okay.
That's the App Store.
Okay. Thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome. I wish it were better. This is an example of, and I see it all the time. It's capitalism. But I think it's short-sighted capitalism. They say, well, they'll get used to this. We don't have to make our users happy. We want to keep them. We want to own them. So we want them to use our app. And so there's not so much incentive. CNN knows you can't see CNN on your Nexus 7. You can't see it on your iPad either. And they could easily fix it. We fixed it on twit.tv. It's easy. But instead they thought, well, what if we don't fix it and we say, hey, it'd be better in the app. Then we can own them. It's capitalism, says UOS DeWis in our chat room. It's capitalism. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hour number 3 coming up right after local news. You stay here. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, cell phones, camcorders, MP3 players, home theater, and all that jazz. 8888. Ask Leo. That's the number. We were talking about the fact that tablets don't play Flash. Adobe killed its Android Flash client. iOS and Apple has never supported Flash on iPad or iPhone. The Flash's days are numbered. But somebody did point out, I shouldn't really castigate CNN for requiring you to use an app, because, in fact, we do too. Maybe for other reasons. I can tell you are thinking, if you want to watch my podcast network or this show and you want to watch live video, we stream it through 3 established providers, Bitgravity, Ustream, and Justin.tv, all of whom offer a Flash player, but nothing else. So, actually, I think there is a non-Flash version of Ustream. But essentially, everybody's on Flash. And we can't afford to do it ourselves. Too many people watch. It would be too expensive. We do have a non-Flash player, but we created that for things like Roku and some of the apps because that's a smaller number of people. We can't afford that. So I have to admit that we're doing the same thing CNN is doing. If you want to watch my podcast network live, you can watch it after the fact without Flash. But if you want to watch those shows live, you have to watch in the app on iOS and Android because you can't watch in a browser. Sorry. So I shouldn't really yell. I shouldn't really yell at CNN and ESPN for doing the same thing. They may have exactly the same reasons. 8888, ask Leo. Rancho Cucamonga, the very patient Charlie. Thanks for hanging on. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, how you doing, Leo?
Thank you, Charlie. Listener. Nice to talk to you.
Good to talk to you, too. First-time listener, always listen to KFI. I've never listened on a Sunday.
Well, it's about time.
Yeah, there I go.
Welcome.
Thank you. All right, my dilemma is I have an old laptop, Pavilion DV4000, which is pretty old. Just broke for the second time, so I do not want to repair it again. And I want a tablet, but at the same time, I need a laptop. So I was wondering if it was going to be a smart idea to go with the Microsoft Surface Pro, which I believe just came out not too long ago.
Yeah, actually, I think it's a very nice. Now, one thing I should say is it's a first generation, so it will undoubtedly get better. And the other thing is you want the 128 gig version if you can get it, and that's in short supply. It looks like if you order it online at store.microsoft.com, you'll have it within a week or so because they say March 1st. I think it's still March 1st. So, I think it's – I have a Surface RT, which is the pure tablet version of Surface, and it's pretty nice. The Surface Pro is, I think, even better. Let me see if I go to the Microsoft site. Oh, they're out of stock again. Wow. They sold out again. So you might be lucky and find a store where they have the 128 gig version. It's $999. And don't forget, especially since you want to use it as a laptop sometimes, you're going to want to get the keyboard that attaches. And I recommend the Type cover. That's more like a real keyboard over the Touch cover, which is just kind of keys painted on a cover. The Touch one, actually, the keys move like a real keyboard.
Okay. I was just a little worried about it. I know the last couple of things Microsoft came out with kind of been bombs.
This one was, it's hard to say if it's a bomb or not. They're selling it out. I think it's nice, but I think there are other good choices, like the Acer Iconia is nice. There are some what we call convertibles where they really are laptops, but they fold around. I think the Surface Pro is good. I would say that this is as good as anything else that's out there right now.
Okay. I think I might pull the trigger on it, maybe. Just go search around, see if I can find one.
That's going to be the trick. Go to Staples and Best Buy, and supposedly there's some there. You might have to get the 64 gig. It just doesn't have a whole lot of free storage. It has about 40 gigs of free storage. Microsoft really thinks that you should be using SkyDrive to store stuff, just as Google thinks you should be using Google Drive. I think 40 gigs is fine if it's word processing, spreadsheets, things like that. It's when you start putting movies on there or filling it up with music that it's a problem. Charlie, when you get it, call back. Let us know how you like it. Tom in Portland, Oregon. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Tom.
Hey, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm in the same time zone as you, so I'm doing all right.
I guess.
I am a late adopter. I just went from Office 03 to Office 2010.
Oh, no. And they just upgraded it to 2013.
So now we got 2013. So my I'm probably really went way too long between the last two versions.
I would stay with what you got for now.
That's your thought?
Yeah. So 2013 doesn't really add a whole lot, really. I mean, how much better can the word processor spreadsheet be?
Well, that was kind of my thought. And there was a big step in productivity and stability and Outlook between 03 and 2010, so I like that.
Yeah, no, I think your 2010 is good. It's got the ribbon UI. It's a big change from previous versions. The 2013 version, the change is more about storing documents on the cloud, a rental model versus a purchase model, things like that.
Got it.
And I think 2010 is maybe the sweet spot, especially if you don't want to pay $100 a year to subscribe.
No, I just should have my own standalone version. Yeah. The thought that I have is I really like the collaborative aspects of Google Docs, and I use it pretty regularly.
Well, you can still use Office 360. You can still use that Office 365, you can still use SkyDrive, SharePoint. It's just not as tightly integrated as it is in the new one.
Okay.
But, I mean, you probably want to get 2013 in a couple of years because you probably, if you like that collaborative aspect, that certainly is an advantage in the new version. Yeah, that's the focus. They want, when you buy for $100 a year, you get 5 installs of Office 2013. You also get use of the Office 365, which is web-based versions of all those apps, Word, Excel, OneNote, PowerPoint. And that way you can, in fact, and by the way, the default storage spot, you can save to the hard drive, but the default save is to SkyDrive, is to the internet. They really want to focus on that. But I think you can do all of that with 2010, too. It just takes a little more, a few more steps. How long ago did you buy 2010?
Oh, probably over a year ago.
Yeah, all right. So you don't get a, you can't get a free upgrade. If you'd bought it recently, you could get a free upgrade, but that's fine. I think you're fine. I would stick with 2010.
Okay. Very good.
Thanks for the call. Yeah, I mean, that's my opinion. If you disagree, call 8888 Ask Leo. I of course have subscribed to Office 2013. I like the idea of installing it on five computers, and Microsoft has pretty much forced your hand, because if you try to buy Office 2013 as a disk standalone, as you used to buy the versions of Office, you can install it on one computer. You can't transfer it to another computer if that computer, you know, you upgrade to a new computer. It's one license per computer. That's not nearly as attractive as this $100 a year, five computers. You can move it around, transfer it, and stuff like that. So, and I don't think there's a whole lot of, from the feature point of view, I mean, come on. We haven't seen a new word processor feature in a few years, I would guess. Let's talk to Carlos. He's got an interesting point of view, calling from New York. Hi, Carlos. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Mr. President, how are you doing today?
I am well. I salute you, Carlos.
I was going to give a shout out to the chat room. Everyone there is awesome.
Isn't it a great chat room? Yeah, if you want to join us, by the way, go to techguylabs.com. There's a link to get into chat. It's a lot of fun. Hey, hang on, Carlos. We do have to take a break, but we'll come back and talk with you in just a bit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Carlos in New York. Sorry to have to interrupt, Carlos, but we're back. Welcome.
Hey, Leo. I have to apologize as well. I don't have enough cupcakes and donuts for the entire chat room.
Well, it is considered appropriate to bring donuts when you visit.
Yes, I'll keep that in mind.
No, don't bring donuts. I'm fat enough. I don't need more donuts.
Well, anyway, with this whole six strike thing going on.
Yeah, we were talking about at the beginning of the show that most of the major internet service providers in the United States are now on Monday will begin implementing this six strikes system, which means that you get six chances to stop stealing stuff before they cut you off. What about it?
Well, Leo, I have to point out I want to say that pirating has actually made me a better consumer.
Whoa.
It actually made me buy things.
Well, you know, you can make that case. I would say that everybody, for instance, in the graphic arts who uses Photoshop frequently started with a pirated version of Photoshop. And as soon as you start using it professionally and seriously, because it's so expensive, started buying it because it's worth buying it to have the latest version, to have it automatically updated, to have the manuals, and because it's ethically, morally right. And I think that a lot of people pirate. Because not because they're thieves, but for other reasons. Why? So you pirate stuff, Carlos?
I pirated a few apps on Android, like Titanium Backup, Root Explorer, and then when they came up with updates, I was like, "Wow, this is awesome! Let me buy it."
So you consider it almost a way of trying before you buy?
Exactly, which is why I love your Audible model. I was listening to Mac Break Weekly a few months ago, and I tried out Audible. And
yeah, we encourage almost all our advertisers to offer free trials because I think it says two things. First of all, it says, hey, we may not be for you. Try it for free. See if you like it. But it also says we're pretty confident that we are a good product, so we're going to let you try it for 30 days. But I do think, Carlos, it's good to buy the stuff you use, don't you?
Yes, that's why I get it. I try it out. And if it's for me, I will buy it because that's what I've been doing. Because some things are way too expensive just to buy and not know if it's good for you.
I think that's a credible point of view. I mean, my only concern would be that it might be tempting on an expensive program to continue the free trial for longer than you should. It's always been my opinion, if you use something professionally, if you use it for work, not only is it ethically right to buy it, it's it's desirable because you want to have a legitimate copy for support reasons. I think there's a price to pay for piracy, and I don't know if it's going to jail or getting your internet cut off. I think the real price is moral, is ethical, is how you feel about yourself, is how you live with yourself. And I guess if you're a sociopath, you don't have any conscience, it might be sit well with you. But I think for a normal person, in the long run, it just doesn't feel right to steal stuff. You're taking somebody's work and using it without giving them what they do. So I think a normal person wants to pay for stuff. And so really, the music industry and the movie industry, they need to make it easier.
Yes, that speaks more to the problems of the current business model.
Right.
Like the Netflix free trial. I tried that when Netflix first came out, and it was amazing, and I got it.
Whether or not it's right to steal, and I don't think it's right to steal, but whether or not it's right to steal, you're in a world where people will steal if you don't make it easy enough for them to buy. And
actually, that brings me to a good point. My uncle got me a copy of Windows XP many, many years ago when it first came out, and I had a format computer a few times, and it stopped working.
Right. You get what you pay for. If it's broken, you can't.
And they accuse me of being a thief.
Oh. Well, that's another, and that's the other side of it. Microsoft is a good example of this because, and it goes back to the earliest days of Bill Gates when he was just a kid and he went to the Homebrew Computer Club and yelled at them for stealing paper tapes of his BASIC. You're stealing my, and he's been almost paranoid about piracy ever since. So Windows, for instance, doesn't have one. Doesn't have two, but has three different anti-piracy measures in it. And as you point out, Carlos, one of them, the Windows Genuine Advantage, gives false positives by Microsoft's own accounting 5% of the time. That means 1 in 20 users of Windows is told you're using a pirated copy even though they paid for it. Seems to me that's the wrong direction to go. In this country, you're innocent till proven guilty. Maybe some guilty people get away, but far better that some guilty people get away than innocent people get jailed, right? Shouldn't it be the same way for piracy? Not you're guilty till you're proven innocent, but that you're innocent until proven guilty. Microsoft's flipped it on its head. You're guilty of piracy until you can prove you're not. And I don't think that's quite right. I don't think that's the way to treat your users. But I would also say that it's important, Carlos, for you and everybody else to understand that if you want to be treated like honest people, that you should act honestly, that you should buy the stuff you use. And I certainly make a point of that. And I even go so far as to buy shareware, stuff that doesn't demand that I pay. But there's a lot of software, free software out there that says, hey, if you want to donate, please do, or you can use this for a while, but if you continue to use it. It was a more popular model a few years ago, the shareware model. And I always made a point of buying shareware because I want to support those independent developers and get them to keep writing great stuff. If I like a program, if I use a program, I'm happy to pay for it. And usually it's not very expensive. Carlos, be an honest guy. You're right. I think there are benefits to piracy. I think paranoia about being stolen from is often gives you the result that you don't want. It teaches people to steal. But we, as users, we need to be honest. We need to be ethical. Pete in San Antonio, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Pete.
Hey, Leo. Hey, how's it going?
It's going well. Welcome.
Great. Thanks. Nice to talk to you again. Hey, I had a question in regards to iOS. I have quite a few different Apple products, iTouch, iPhone, iPad. And I've noticed something that happens sporadically with practically all of them, no matter what iOS operating system they're running.
Mm-hmm.
But not sure if these are just bad programming from different companies, but like memory leaks on a few of the devices. I do have them jailbroken, and I like to keep an eye at the top of the screen. It shows how much RAM you have, not how much storage, but I guess how much RAM the actual device it has. And sometimes it'll dip anywhere between 8 to 5 megabytes, and when it does that, the device is practically a brick until it recuperates some of it.
Right. This is, you're calling it a memory leak. The technical definition of a memory leak is when a program claims RAM or memory and never releases it, even if it no longer needs it. That's not necessarily what's going on here. Sometimes a little knowledge is a dangerous thing. We'll talk about that when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo, was that Weird Al?
It was.
All right. Now, I'll tell you, if you're curious, if you want to know what songs we hear at these bumpers, the best thing to do is to download the playlist. If you're following my musical director, Kyle Benham, on Google Plus, he'll see it at the end of every show. K-Y-L-E space B-E-N-H-A-M. Circle him on Google Plus, but we'll also put it in our show notes. TechGuyLabs.com at the end of the show. TechGuyLabs.com. Let's see here. Who's been holding on the longest? Looks like David in Fort Lauderdale. You're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, David.
Yes, Leo. I'm calling and get your opinion on a new product in my area. It's called OMG Fast.
I like the name.
Or maybe you know it as Clear Band Service.
Mm.
It's wireless transmission of internet from a stationary antenna on the ground to an antenna that they mount on your house. They're doing it right now for $29.95 a month plus $10 for equipment, and they're saying up to 50 megabytes per second.
Well, the thing to do whenever you've got a new internet service provider is to go to DSLReports.com or Broadband Reports, their newer name, but it's still at DSLReports.com. They review ISPs there, and I'm just looking on a forum thread on DSLReports.com talking about OMG Fast. One user who's had it for about a week. It's WiMAX, by the way, just so everybody who is listening understands what they're doing. WiMAX is something Sprint used for its 4G for a while. WiMAX is very closely related to Wi-Fi. It's just better for long distances, and it's capable of carrying more bandwidth. User GlitchSys, who's using OMG Fast in South Florida, or is he in South Florida? No, where is he?
That's where I am.
Yeah. He says the bandwidth is good. The 3.2 megabit upload has been constant. I've never seen it less. He's always getting at least 45 to 55 megabits down. That's very good, and that's what they're promising is 50. He says the latency is bad, and that's not unusual. Sometimes you see that on satellite as well. He's saying 40 to 65 milliseconds. That's not horrible. It might be an issue if you're doing a lot of real-time gaming, like
not
Call
enough,
of Duty.
No
gaming. Yeah, and VoIP may sometimes... VoIP is impacted, you know, voice over the internet, things like Vonage is impacted by poor latency.
Yeah, I asked them about Vonage, and they said they don't support Vonage.
Yeah, so
I
that's
don't know if
that's
just telling me that because they also sell a telephone service.
Yeah, that's probably right, but they're probably also being honest with you that Vonage will be less than ideal on something like that. So
okay.
It's megabits, right? Not megabytes. Remember that. That's 50 megabits a second is more like 25 megabytes a second. Or, I'm sorry, 2.5 megabytes a second.
Right. All right. Well, I don't know if I'll try it because I really use my Vonage. I got a great rate.
It's good that you inquired about that. Yeah, VoIP is not ideal on these kinds of things. And also, your mileage may vary depending on how close to your antenna is. On the other hand, they save a lot of money because they don't have to put a cable line in the ground or Fios or anything in the ground, right?
But they do put an antenna up on the house.
Well, you pay for it, right? You have to buy some gear.
No, they're doing this right now. Free install, no term contract, and free setup.
Well, that sounds like a good deal. But
and
you're
a
right.
Lifetime price guarantee at $29.95 plus the $10 a month.
That's not bad.
If it works.
That's not bad. Well, I would look at the reviews. You know, there are some things you should be aware of. It's line of sight. It's very high frequency, which means that a tree in the way could cause problems. So a lot of this is going to depend on where their antenna is, where your antenna is, and how clear the view is. Unfortunately, it looks like they have to use their router. You can't use your router. That could be a drawback for some of our listeners, not all of them.
Well, once I have their router, then I can take their router and plug it into my router.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right. I just judging by these reviews, and again, Broadband Reports is a great resource for this kind of stuff. People seem fairly happy with this. Now, the antenna is big. Have you looked at the size of the antenna?
Yeah, it's like having a satellite dish.
Yeah, it's kind of ugly and big. And of course, they have to install it carefully because they've got to aim it right at their antenna, line of sight. But everything I'm seeing here is it looks pretty good. The latency is the only negative. But you are getting the bandwidth they're promising, which is pretty good. Now, there's three pages of comments. I haven't been able to review all of them. But
I've looked through them. The other concern is if we have a little bit of a hurricane, probably knock my antenna.
There goes that antenna. Yeah, it's like a sail. It's going to catch the wind.
All right, I appreciate your advice.
All right. Hey, thank you for the call. And it's the first I'd heard of it, but looking at these reviews, one thing, one of the... people on the, and this goes back to July of last year. The guy who started the thread said, I decided to cancel them because of the latency issues. They came and picked up their equipment. The ping and lag was crazy. He was just not happy with it. Sounds like he might have been a gamer. He says, Vonage or any VoIP won't work with it. He says, it might be possible, I don't know, for them to make it work. They don't, though. So that is a big negative. If you want to use some sort of VoIP, I presume that means Skype won't work with it either. That lag can really bite you if you're trying to do that. And for gaming, not great. Others are saying it's inconsistent, up and down a lot. That would probably be dependent on the locale you're in and how well implemented it is. And that may be growing pains with something brand new like that. In theory, WiMAX, that was why WiMAX was developed, was to make it possible to wirelessly connect people at wired speeds in areas where it just wasn't economically viable to put in cable or fiber. That's what WiMAX was invented for. Jennifer in Acton, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Jennifer.
Hello, Leo. Okay, I have two quick questions for you.
Yes.
Okay, I live in Acton, and I don't have internet. So I'm hoping that you can tell me if I can set my iPhone to my Xbox Live.
No internet. I wouldn't move anywhere that didn't have internet.
I know.
I hope you have a gorgeous view and 50 acres and horses and apple trees.
Well, we don't have horses, but we have lots of wildlife around us and lots of land.
Yeah, and this is the distance. And by the way, going back to this WiMAX thing, that's one of the things, the hopes was that people in rural areas who can't get internet because you just can't wire, you know, where there's a population density of 5 people per square mile, it's just not cost effective to wire them. The hope was wireless solutions like WiMAX would fix that. So you're proposing to use, you have good 3G where you are?
It's not great, and that was where my second question came in, was I've heard of this Wilson Sleek cell phone antenna booster.
Yeah, but it won't help.
Okay. I didn't want to buy it. It wasn't going to help.
Yeah, it won't help. It works. So the idea of the Wilson works, but the idea is you would somehow put an antenna where there was good connection, and then it would repeat it back to where there was a bad connection. Hang on, Jennifer. I'll talk a little bit about what you can do. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Scaffold. Love Adele. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let's see. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. We were talking before the break with Jennifer in Acton. She lives in the country. It's beautiful there. But she wants to play Xbox Live, darn it. And unfortunately, Jennifer, you cannot do it on a cell phone.
Okay.
And especially if you have marginal, it's going to be even worse. This thing that we were talking about in the last call, our latency or lag, is a killer in gaming. Mm-hmm. And it is a problem with these Thank you, Homer. Let me just shut him up. I've got Homer Simpson. I have a Homer Simpson game on my phone, and there is no way to turn it off, and he just makes lots of noise. Go away, Homer. So unfortunately, when you move to Acton, what you gained in beautiful sunsets, you're going to lose in Call of Duty maiming. I'm sorry, gaming. Or maiming. What game do you play, Jennifer? Or is it for you?
Kids.
It's for your kids. That's what I thought. Yeah. You didn't sound like somebody really was into Black Ops.
No.
How old are your kids?
They are 10 and 14.
Tell them to go outside and climb a tree. You got plenty of those.
Yes, we do.
You know what? This is a good excuse. I'm sorry, honey, but we just can't.
Yeah.
The good news is you can't. The 3G is adequate for email and surfing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're just not for gaming. Not for VoIP, not for things that really are demanding. You just don't have enough speed, and the latency will kill you. Now, there are some solutions you could consider. There is a satellite internet out there.
Yeah, we're trying that right now, but we have a mountain in the way, so it's coming and going.
So, which one are you trying?
We're trying Dish Network.
Okay. There's one that is it Blue? I'm trying to remember the name of it that I really liked quite a bit. That's a newer system than the Dish system. The problem with these is they're very Wild Blue. That's it, Wild Blue. They're very expensive because you have to acquire the hardware.
Mm-hmm.
So they kind of lock you in. Wildblue.com. I've seen amazing results. Still good enough to play games with, but you have this latency issue, which means shooters are not going to work well.
Mm-hmm.
Because people will move and you won't see them move fast enough. So,
okay.
But I do like Wildblue. It's Exceed, EXEDE is the name of their service. I don't, you know, their satellites probably, is it the South Sky you need access to? I think it is.
Yes.
Yeah, and so the mountains to the south of you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I suspect it's the same problem, but I don't know. You should look and see.
Okay.
But even then, gaming is not going to be ideal.
Right.
And yeah, the Wilson only helps if you can get its one end of it to a place where there is good internet access, good 3G access, and then it lets you. So, for instance, one of the reasons I'm experienced with it is that we have a friend who has a cell phone store just down the block here, and he moved into a store where there's no cell access. But as minute he goes outside his front door of his store, there is. Now, how do you sell cell phones in a store where you can't get a cell phone access? Well, he put one of these antennas outside his door, and it then transmits it back into the rest of the store, and it works great. I think that unfortunately, if you can't get one of the satellites, you won't be able to get any of the satellites. I think they're all in the southern sky. You know what? You've got a beautiful view, Jennifer. That's what really counts. All right. Pete in San Antonio, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Pete.
Hey, we were talking earlier in regards to the memory, possible memory leaks.
Oh, I'm sorry. I had completely forgot about you. So, yeah, my apology. You're very patient. Thank you for hanging on. So a memory leak technically is what I said, which is an application that allocates memory and doesn't give it back. That's not probably what you're seeing. What you're seeing, and this is considered good behavior on portable devices, the apps allocate memory but allow the operating system to reclaim it when needed or when the app is idle. So the way that portable devices work is a little different than the way computers that we're used to work. The operating system, Android or iOS, is designed to kind of manage this for the apps. So you may not see a memory leak. What you're seeing is an app that's acquiring a lot of memory, unfortunately. That's maybe bad design. But you do see it released after a time, right?
It varies. On one of my devices, practically everything crashes on it. It's an older iTouch 2, so pretty much it's become a paperweight according to Apple's logic.
Yeah. So an app that has a memory leak, what it will do is it will crash your system because it will just keep acquiring memory and never release it, and nothing can run, and eventually the system just crashes. Modern mobile operating systems like iOS are designed to prevent that. So, but now when you jailbreak it, all things are off. All bets are off. This is why I don't jailbreak. I found all sorts of problems once you jailbreak.
Interesting.
Because you can now get apps that are completely bazooties, right? They're badly written.
Yeah, that is true, too.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking that some of the poorly written apps are actually official apps. A lot of the VoIP apps, I think they are still using.
Yeah, but you don't know. That memory thing that you're seeing, who knows if that's causing the problem. I don't think that you're not allowed to complain if you jailbreak and then something's not working.
Well, on one of my iPads, it's not jailbroken, and it's just displaying the same thing. It's an iPad 1, but I have two iPad 1s. One's a 16 gig, and the other's 64 gig.
Well, that's not the memory. The memory is the RAM, and that's 256K.
True.
Or megs, I'm sorry, on the thing. So,
but they're identical devices, except for the storage. But yet the 64 gig one
is it? Do you notice one app worse than the others? There's some apps. Usually what will happen when an app is poorly written is it won't crash the OS, but it will force close. It will close itself, and that happens all the time.
Yes, that happens quite often.
That's not unusual. And I see that still happening a lot in Android and iOS, that apps just force close.
Is there like a task manager app that you're aware of that shows like...
No, you don't want any of that stuff because... All of this is managed by the portable operating system. You obviously know too much. You're used to how computers work. This is completely different.
Yeah.
Because of the scant resources on portable devices, iOS and Android do all sorts of stuff to close out apps that aren't being used, to let apps idle, to get back memory. All of this is very different from the way a desktop operating system operates. In fact, I think it's been such a success that desktop operating systems are going to start doing this, that apps will be unable to do some of the things they used to do because memory and all of that will be handled by the operating system instead of by the application. A lot of the problems we have are because applications have been let run rampant. Anything goes. And it's one of the reasons there's security issues on desktop operating systems that just don't exist on mobile devices. Hey, thanks for the call. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great geek week.
More.
Oh! Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on MacBreak Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.